New Perspectives Open Pitch presents Memoirs of a Little 'Un, a 10-part collection of heartwarming stories and reminiscences of growing up in rural England during the 60s by Chrissy Payne. Part 7. Going, Going, Gone.
Today, daytime television often consists largely of repeats of popular detective shows and numerous programmes featuring antiques. The format usually along the lines of a specialist announcing that the old blue and white piece of pottery you've brought along to the show, complete with the bits of loose change that are rattling about inside, is a very rare Ming Dynasty bowl. And by contrast, a wonderful piece of glass that family legend claims was Jacobean was in fact manufactured in Bridlington in 1905. I think I'm correct in suggesting that the first antique celebrity was dear Arthur Nagus, who presented the hugely popular TV show Going for a Song, which ran from 1965 until 1977. The predecessor of the Antiques Roadshow. Going for a Song would fill our sitting room on Sunday tea time, and it was must viewing. In grainy black and white images, Arthur lovingly strokes and fondles objects, pointing out their workmanship. Every other week, my mother tries to chip in. "Our Beatty had one of those." Or, "Huh, antique. I'm still using mine." The viewing public immediately took to Arthur Nagus, who was very knowledgeable but never highbrow, and in my humble opinion made the world of antiques and objets d'art accessible in every sphere of society for the very first time. In our household, we had a great affinity with antiques, or, more accurately, old stuff, mainly because we were surrounded by it. I can count on one hand anything that crossed our threshold that was brand new, because the entire contents of our house came courtesy of the sale room. An old cinema from the days of the silent screen, and long since demolished, is the venue in our little town for the Royce sales room. The interior stripped of its plush seats and Wurlitzer organ, providing ample space for the jumble of bits and pieces that fill it. I loved accompanying my father to the viewing day in readiness for the Thursday fortnightly sale. Bert Mead, wearing his sandy-coloured overalls, ferries the various lots around.
"What do you think of this?"
He beckons me over to a huge mahogany table piled high with chamber sets, coal scuttles and dusty photo albums. In and amongst them stand, in pride of place, a glass dome, and my eyes almost pop out. The dome is filled with a bucolic woodland backdrop, and in the centre, a miniature cut-down tree trunk serves as a table for four stuffed red squirrels playing a game of cards. I'm both fascinated and horrified at the same time. The walls of the sale room are lined with huge, richly patterned rugs from Persia and Turkey that had been the height of Victorian taste. There are always masses of china dinner services, with at least 12 settings, each complete with tureens and sauce boats, presumably all hand-painted, and washed by a legion of lowly paid kitchen skivvies. This, however, was the 1960s, the age of Pyrex, oven to tableware. I particularly love rummaging through the boxes of books. The pages smell musty and have the tell-tale little brown spots often seen on paintings as well, and known as foxing. The illustrations are richly coloured, but often quite scary for children to look at, with inscriptions on the frontispiece always beautifully inscribed in copperplate, but very formal and remote. "Season's greetings, dearest Margaret. Christmas, 1898. Who is Margaret? And where is she now? I ask myself. It all adds to the sheer delight and mystique of the sale room, although that is not a view universally shared, by my mother in particular. Mother craves the neon colours synonymous with the 1960s. Furniture with melamine tops that you just have to wipe over with a damp cloth. And quirky chairs with spindly legs. Instead, she gets fat, bulbous club chairs with horsehair stuffing bulging out all over the place and covered in a funny material called Rexine. Its particular, unique selling point being the most awful drab colour known to man. Father refers to these purchases as his rainy day projects. Thursday lunchtimes are particularly entertaining. We always tune in to The World at One on the radio for the daily news bulletin. 1:30 comes and goes with Father still not back for his lunch. This could mean only one thing. Mother, casting her eyes up toward the clock, and with an air of resignation, returns Father's lunch back to the stove on a low light. His lateness means he's been to the sale room.
Ta-da!
Father suddenly appears, excited and enthusiastic, holding a box full of his precious objet d'art, or, as Mother prefers to call it, rammel, a local term for junk. Before we got to see any of his goodies, Father talks them up.
Wonderful quality.
I happen to know this comes from a fine country house.
And his favourite expression.
Only ever made two of these, and the Duke of Rutland has the other one.
Like a magician pulling a rabbit from a hat, we are treated to a never-ending array of Victorian kitchenalia. An ice cream maker where you fill a drum with a gallon of cream and then pack the sides with ice. By continually turning the handle for several hours, you can produce your very own ice cream. As Mother would say. And who are you expecting to turn the handle for several hours? One particular purchase that springs to mind is a strange contraption made of steel and about the size of a shoebox. It has two large screws on either end and a steel plate on the top and bottom. Us girls are intrigued. "What on earth is it, Dad?" inquires my sister Susie.
"A tongue press," Father replies nonchalantly.
"Good grief! I know the Victorians thought children should be seen and not heard, but isn't this taking it a bit too far?"
exclaims my elder sister Denise, visibly terrified.
"Don't be daft,"
responds Father, adding, "although I can see the merits of that suggestion."
"No,
it's for pressing an ox tongue.
I've not had any for years. Can't beat it with a dollop of piccalilli."
We know this means we'll be treated to this rare delicacy at the weekend. Father loved the novelty of using these old bits of kit, turning the kitchen upside down in the process. Saturday tea time comes, and the tongue arrives in a dish, having been pressed. Perhaps if it had been sliced and garnished, this would have made it more appetizing. But instead the tongue arrives, well, just like a big tongue. Father proceeds to remove the skin and we all sit around the table looking at each other in horror. Those wonderful quotations, "Think of England," and "England expects," spring to mind as one by one a plate is passed to us individually. Father is not one for fine carving, and what we receive is more akin to a tongue steak. Thankfully, being the little un, I'm not subjected to a large portion. But I watch on as my sisters pile high their plates with a golden heap of piccalilli, knowing full well that the dreaded tongue lurks within. Father smacks his lips.
"By Jove, Mother, this takes me back a few years. When you're next in Denison's, the butcher's, pick up a couple of pig's trotters. I'm going to try my hand at making a brawn for next Saturday."
Not all of Father's sale room purchases are such boobies. Far from it, in fact. He always seems to be on a constant search for glass to replace the cracked panes in our old Victorian greenhouse. Bizarrely, the cheapest way of achieving this is to purchase old pictures of a suitable size from the sale room, removing the glass and discarding the frame and picture. On a particular occasion, after lashing out 10 bob on 2 old oil paintings, Mother intervenes. They'd look nice in the dining room. Seems such a shame to dispose of them. Father heeds Mother's suggestion, and the 2 paintings are hung in the dining room, the deep red flock wallpaper setting off the heavy gilt frames a treat. There they remain for well over 25 years, until one day my brother-in-law, to be, remarks on their quality and suggests it would be well worth researching the artists. This is well before the internet, so having made a note of the names, I tootle off to the library to do some research. The detective work pays off, and to see the artists' names in print is a revelation. A large volume lists their work and where it's held. Aberdeen, Amsterdam, Antwerp, and now our dining room. I rush back home, clutching the piece of paper containing all the notes I've made. I'm so excited, I can hardly get the information out.
Fancy that. Must be worth a bob or two. I always knew they were quality, Father says rather smugly.
We all gather around the paintings, as if for the first time, casting our critical eyes. Then, in unison, we suddenly remember the greenhouse. Who knows what works of art have been lost to the world for the sake of Father's precious tomatoes? The 10 bob paintings are still in the family. As for the tongue press, try the Chamber of Horrors. The end.
Going, Going, Gone by Chrissy Payne was performed by Juanita McMahon, with sound design by Adam P. McCready. Supported using public funding from Arts Council England. It's produced by New Perspectives Theatre Company's Open Pitch, a unique community programme that showcases extraordinary stories from across the East Midlands.